You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
The Earth is often referred to as a blue marble of our solar system. The blue hue, as seen from space, is a reflection of the water that covers 70% of the Earth's surface. This water is very attractive, enticing over one half of the U.S. population to live within 50 miles of the coast. Sadly, the seemingly boundless nature of our marine resources has caused people to take it for granted. We become outraged when there are huge oil spills. But what about the small amount of oil that our cars leak onto the roadways every day? Where does it go? Much into our oceans. The oceans have served as a convenient garbage dumping site. The junk that pollutes our oceans ranges from pet droppings that enter the storm drains and groundwater, industrial noxious waste, and runoff. Regrettably, the health of our oceans and its inhabitants have suffered tremendously. But it's not just the seas and fish that are feeling the ill effects. The health of land dwellers are also impacted. What can a veterinarian do? What can you do? Dr. Gatos, Chief Scientist and Wildlife Veterinarian at UC Davis Wildlife Center, Orcas Islands in East Sound, Washington, will be my guest today and give us some sobering facts and reason for hope. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step by step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Silvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's All Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Gatos, thank you for being with us. You have the job that I would love to have. What a marvelous place you live.
Yeah, it is a fantastic place.
Oh, yeah. How did a veterinarian get involved in sea docks? You know, are veterinarians taking care of the sea?
Exactly. This is a kind of a new thing now, Bernadine, that, you know, for a long time veterinarians have been interested in animal health, and starting with domestic animals and then pets and then wildlife. And now we realize that really if we want to have healthy wildlife populations, we need to have healthy ecosystems, and the conditions that are going on in the ocean right now are definitely in need of a good veterinarian to get out there and help clean things up.
How many years now has SeaDoc organization been in existence?
So the SeaDoc program, which is, as you mentioned before, is a program of the UC Davis Wildlife Health Center, part of the veterinary school, has been around almost 10 years now, and I've been here for 8 of those 10 years.
Tell us a little bit about where you're living so we can all drool.
My focus is the inland ocean, the inland sea of Washington and British Columbia, and this is about a 16,000 square kilometer inland sea. And my house and my office are about right in the middle. There's a group, an archipelago of islands called the San Juan Islands, and I live on Orcas Island, which is about 50 square miles, and it's part of San Juan County, which is the only county in the United States comprised entirely of islands. We have about 407 miles of shoreline. So for people like me that want to work on healthy ocean issues, this is the place to be.
Wow. I want to grow up and become you. Now, what does your day typically involve? I know you say that you're interested in the oceans, but that's a lot of ground to cover or a lot of water to cover.
Right. My day is very highly variable. The SeaDoc Society's main goal is to produce good information and then have that information be used to help populations of fish or wildlife and then ultimately benefit people. And so my day, one day I may be doing something very fun like out scuba diving and counting and measuring fish to see if voluntary no fishing areas are working. Yesterday we had multiple calls. We were trying to track down a stranded killer whale. And then other days I may spend a lot of time in front of the computer writing up scientific articles, or other days I may be in meetings with people from the governor's office or the Department of Fish and Wildlife or the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission, trying to make sure that the information that we're learning is actually getting used to improve the way we do things. So it's really quite a variable day.
It would seem as though, you know, the ocean is huge, and all right, you know, we have to dump our junk someplace. So doesn't it just get diluted out? You put landfill in the middle of the United States and then you get covered up and, oh, okay, it seems fine. So why doesn't it just get diluted out when we dump it in the ocean?
Well, that's what we've thought for a long time, that, you know, dilution was the solution. But what we're learning now is there are a lot of chemicals out there that when you put them out there, they don't really break down. And even if you dump something into the ocean and it apparently goes away, you don't see it on your beach, you don't see it in the water when you're swimming, it's going somewhere. And we're even finding things, trash particles in areas of the Antarctic where very few people have ever been, and that's being moved through tides and currents. The other thing that is interesting that we're learning more and more about is that we are taking things out of the ocean all the time. We're taking chemicals out, we're taking biological products that we're using for pharmaceuticals, and obviously we're taking fish and invertebrates that we eat out, and those things that we dump in the ocean are coming back to us in the fish that we eat. So we're realizing that we have to be a lot more careful, and the ocean is a much more delicate place than we ever thought it was.
What has been some of the most interesting things that you have seen where you went, oh my goodness, I would never have thought?
Right, that is a good thing. One of the interesting things that came around relatively recently, and with some support from financial support from the SeaDoc Society, is some work that's been looking at flame retardants in different animals. Now, these are chemicals that people have heard of, PCBs. These are called polychlorinated biphenols. It's a long name for a chemical that we made that sticks around for a long, long time, and we used to use it as in commercial uses, insulators and things like that. And we banned those probably in the 1950s. I think we started making them in about the 30s, banned them in the 50s. And we're seeing levels go down in fish and wildlife. But since then, we've made a chemical very similar. We've kind of taken off the chlorine and added a bromine and made these chemicals called polychlorinated diphenyl ethers, these PBDEs. And these are flame retardants, so we have them in our carpets, in our clothes, in our baby clothes, in our beds, and we're finding these chemicals are getting everywhere. They're in breast milk, and they're also in the ocean. And one of the ironic things is that while we used to hunt whales to get the oil from them, and we would use the oil to light our street lights and light our houses because it was so much energy in there, you could light it on a fire, but now we have concentrations of these flame retardants so high in our whales that we probably couldn't use them to light a lamp if we had to. So we have flame retardant killer whales and other whales out there right now because of things we've insidiously dumped in the ocean.
Wow. Now, aren't PCBs the chemical that was found in California condors and was causing them to have problems with their eggs so the eggs wouldn't hatch?
A very similar chemical called DDT that was doing that.
That's it.
That's a short name for a chemical called dichlorodiphenyltrichloroethane. So you can see why we say DDT instead.
I'm glad you said it.
And those were made in the 1920s. And it was an interesting thing with that is that we found out that those chemicals that we thought were the greatest thing for killing mosquitoes and stopping malaria had this real insidious effect of having an effect on the calcium secreting gland on condors and other animals. And then when they laid their eggs, the eggs were very soft and they would get crushed. So these animals weren't reproducing like we thought they would. And it took a while, but ultimately through good science, people figured out, hey, we really need to ban these chemicals if we want to bring these birds back. And these chemicals are probably having an effect on people as well.
Why do you think that the whales have such a high concentration of these flame retardants?
Well, I think because what happens is that everything that we do on land turns out to affect the ocean. Even in Seattle, we have some of the highest levels of caffeine in our ocean water compared to anywhere around the world, and that's because we drink a lot of coffee.
That's all those Starbucks everywhere, yes.
Exactly. And people aren't out there going to the bathroom in the water, but it comes from our septic systems and goes out into the water. We can tell in Seattle when people start doing their holiday cooking because we have high levels of cinnamon and vanilla and things like that in the water, in the ocean water around Seattle. And so everything we do on land is impacting that. So all of these chemicals are moving through the system. They're very, very stable, so they don't break down. And they ultimately get into the ocean. They really like fatty type things, so they get into the food chain. They get magnified in the food chain. So as a small animal eats it, a bigger animal eats it, they start to accumulate. And then if you have something like a killer whale that's eating hundreds of pounds of salmon over the course of a few days, then those are going to accumulated at really, really high levels in killer whales.
Besides not being able to use whale fat in order to light our lampposts, thankfully we're not doing that anymore, but I know there are some countries that still hunt whale as a source of meat. Are these flame retardants then going to be causing, that we know of now, any problems for the whale and subsequently any problems for people who are eating whale meat?
Well, I think very similar to PCBs, these flame retardants probably have some really subtle effects, and one of them being the way that they can modify our immune system. So whenever we get exposed to a disease, we don't necessarily get that disease because our immune system will fight it off. If we have some chemicals aboard that maybe decrease our ability and our cells' ability to fight off different diseases, then we can have problems. And we think that these flame retardants probably cause that in mammals and wild mammals, and it's in people as well. And so there's more and more concern. There's even recently an article that came out showing that as veterinarians, we see a lot of thyroid tumors in cats. And, of course, if you think about the life of a cat, they're laying on the carpet, they're laying on the bed, they're licking themselves all the time, they're licking the bed. And some people have said, hey, you know, there's a really good chance that there could be a close association with these flame retardants and all of these tumors in cats. And so with that being said, I mean, I think that it's probably an indicator that we need to do a little bit more work in people, and we probably don't want these chemicals around like we have them right now.
Sometimes I say it's better living through chemistry, but this sounds as though it may be biting us in the bum later on. I did read that article about hyperthyroidism in cats, and it is fascinating because I've been a veterinarian now for over 20 years. And when I was in veterinary school, I don't know if maybe I was just sleeping that day. When they talked about hyperthyroidism cats, it seemed to be quite uncommon. And now I'm seeing it very commonly. So it'd be interesting to see how this science works out if they can find a cause and effect.
Yeah, it really will be. And I think people are starting to work on that more and more all the time. And that's really the beauty of being able to do good science is we can figure these things out and we can make change. And that's what I love about my job, too, is I feel like good information begets good decisions, usually.
And you have a lot of fun, too, it sounds like.
Well, that should help with it.
You had mentioned in Seattle, you can tell when all of a sudden they're doing their cooking because of the cinnamon. And yes, I can imagine the fish around the sound, whee, run around or swim around very quickly because of all that caffeine. But in my mind, I would also think, okay, we have wastewater treatment plants. Can't they just take these chemicals out of the water?
That's a really good point. And we do have wastewater treatment plants, and there are two issues with the wastewater treatment plants. Number one, we are very lucky that we have them because, boy, it would really be a mess if we didn't have them. But we have something called storm overflows where in areas like the Pacific Northwest, where we have a big rain event that comes, and water that should be treated doesn't always get treated and can run over. So there are things, occasions when these treatment plants get bypassed and everything goes straight into the ocean. The other thing that happens is that these treatment plants are primarily designed to take out things like bacteria from poop and things like that. They're not really designed to take out small pharmaceuticals. And, you know, if you think of people on taking birth control or people taking medication for different diseases, lots of these medications move right through the system because the systems aren't designed to take out these subtle little, tiny particles. They're really looking more to keep down big contaminants like bacteria, which are much larger. So really people are saying, wow, you know, maybe we need to be doing something a little bit different, or maybe we need to, when you're done with all of those pills that the doctor gave you and you had too many, don't dump them down the toilet like we used to, but you need to be putting them into the trash instead. So I think we're really starting to think differently about these waste treatment plants.
Because I remember that's how I was told, you know, you have extra pills, whatever, just put them down the toilet. It's like, not a good idea. It all does go around. You had talked about killer whales and saying that killer whales can tell us a little bit about the health of the ocean. Now, is it just these flame retardants that we're learning about from whales?
Well, that's a good point. Chemicals are definitely one important way that they can tell us about the ocean. But also another thing that if you think about whales, these whales spend a lot of time hunting and looking for food using echolocation. And some things that are going on with an endangered population in our area called the southern resident killer whales, we know that because of the amount of noise under there, that these whales are having a much harder time communicating with each other and a much harder time finding food. So that's another thing that's important. Underwater is very sound travels very fast, and it can be very noisy. And then one of the things, like we talked about before with some of these chemicals, is that noise, you know, it can interfere with their echolocation, reduce their ability to capture the prey, but it can also increase stress that can make changes in their hormones and also affect their immune system as well. Anybody that's got sick when they're studying for finals knows about how stress can impact your immune system. And so I think this things that are going on with underwater noise, we're really learning about it because of whales and because of what's happening. Let me give you one example. And if you go to a concert and it's very loud and you're talking with your friend telling him you need to do something, you speak slowly and you speak loudly. You say, "Hey, I need to go out for a break." And it's interesting. There have been several studies recently on killer whales showing they are doing the exact same thing now, that the underwater noise has gotten so high that the killer whales are producing longer calls, which is like an anti-masking mechanism compensating for all this background noise because of boats that are out there.
Are we getting any closer to understanding what they're saying?
That is a good question. I think it depends who you talk to. There are a book by a woman, Mary Getton, who says she can communicate with killer whales. But as I talk with other scientists that study echolocation, they are at the point right now where they can determine one group of whales from another group of whales. Whales are very social, kind of like elephants, and like to hang in very tight matrilineal groups. And they can say, hey, this is this group or this is that group. But as far as predicting what they're saying, they're not as convinced as Mary Getton is.
So they have their own little dialect as such, but it's not going to be like the bilingual that they have for dogs, the collar, that's supposed to tell you what your dog is thinking and saying.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah. Well, we've been saying that our oceans are really affecting our entire world, and they are one of our health monitors. So we've been talking right now with Dr. Gatos. We'll be right back after this short break and find out what other species out there are telling us how the Earth is being affected health-wise. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Give your your dog some thought with Dog Thoughts. It's the iPhone application that everyone's talking about.
What do you think of this? A man in Davis, California says he's invented an application for the iPhone that claims it can read your dog's mind. Huh? No, it's true. I read about it on my cat's Twitter page. That's fine.
Jay Leno talked about it, CBS reported on it, and now you can see what all the buzz is about. Created just for dog lovers, Dog Thoughts makes taking photos of your furry best friend more fun. Shake your dog and read his mind. On your iPhone, of course. Take a pic of your pup, shake your phone, and watch as his thoughts appear on the screen. Does he have a bone to pick with you, or is he having a tail-wagging day? Get your Dog Thoughts iPhone app today. Just 99 cents. Go to PetLifeRadioPromotions.com. That's PetLifeRadioPromotions.com.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Life Radio presents Paranormal Pets, where you can always expect the unexpected. Each week we'll discuss all aspects of weird or spiritual animal encounters, ghosts, totems, psychic animals, animal souls, animal angels, and animals in religion, with a little cryptozoology thrown in. Step into the supernatural world of pets with your Paranormal Pets ghostly host, Dusty Rainbolt, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Gatos, this is so fascinating. I really do want to grow up and be you, or at least go visit where you are, because it just sounds like an amazing day. Every day you wake up and it's something fascinating.
Well, you're very welcome to come and visit, and a lot of people do, and I really do. I think it's fantastic that people love to go to special places and appreciate them, because that's really the only thing that's going to save special places in the long run. So you are more than welcome to come on, Bernadine.
Good. Well, some of the special things that are part of our oceans are not just the killer whales. What other species have you studied, and what are they telling you about the health of the ocean?
Well, in our region, another species that I love a lot are river otters.
Oh, they're cute.
They're great. And we have, on the outer coast of Washington, we have sea otters, which are true marine mammals. But in the inland ocean, which is a salty sea, we have river otters that don't just go up rivers, but they actually come out and they forage in the marine waters and they catch marine fish like herring and eat salmon and they eat crab and other things like that. And we've been studying river otters for several years. And we an interesting finding that we just had was that river otters in areas that are more developed have exposure to diseases that are coming from our pets, from domestic animals. And this is a fascinating type of thing. I think that we've always felt like we have an impact on the ocean because of chemicals or because of driving our car or because of maybe the way that we cut down trees to build our houses or things like that. But I think a lot of us forget that our domestic animals can also have an impact on wildlife. And this is why it's really important for people to take really good care of their domestic animals and try and do all of the preventive care that's possible, vaccinations, keep those animals healthy, and when that dog or that cat are out there going to the bathroom outside, to make sure you pick that up. So that's, I guess, probably another really good example of how we have an impact and how wildlife have shown us what our impact is.
I was reading, and this, I'm not sure if it's the same organism, that cats can have an organism called toxoplasmosis, and that's one that pregnant women are always so concerned with, because if they get exposed to it while they're pregnant, it can theoretically affect the fetus and cause blindness and some other issues. Is that the same organism that's causing problems for the sea otters or the river otters?
Right. That's, that same organism is causing problems in both sea otters and in river otters. And that's one of the organisms that's a really good example. And I think that we've seen in places, really nice work's been done in California showing that in areas where we've really modified the way that fresh water moves from land into the ocean, sea otters are much more likely to get this Toxoplasma gondii, this protozoal parasite. And then if you looked at and you compared it to Alaska, we don't see this up in Alaska, and it's probably because Alaska is much less developed, though we don't have as many domestic cats that are out there, feral cats, and we haven't changed the way that the water moves from land into the ocean by putting in roads and cutting down trees. Same thing we've seen in river otters. When we look at river otters in Washington State compared to Alaska, we see much higher levels of exposure in river otters than we do in Washington than we do in Alaska. So that's one of those parasites that's a really, really good example.
Are you one of the scientists that believes there is global warming? And if you do believe so, how is it affecting the oceans?
I am one of those scientists that believes that there's climate change going on now. And there's a great group in Washington, Center for Climate Change at the University of Washington, and they're producing a lot of good work. And what there's a couple of things that they're showing us. One of them that's fascinating to me, I never really thought about, never really learned during chemistry, is that when I was in school, people were saying the ocean is infinitely buffered, meaning you can put in something like an acid and it's not going to have an impact because there's so much buffering capabilities. Well, that's not really true. We're learning that what's happening with climate change is that increased levels of CO2 in the ocean are actually causing acidification of the ocean water. And you think, well, it's not acidification to the point that you're going to jump in and it's going to burn your skin like some heavy acid. What it's going to have is a really subtle effect on the way that organisms that create shells like clams and oysters and mussels and things like that are able to produce their shell. And there's a lot of these organisms that use calcium to make shells, and all of those organisms are going to be impacted. What we're trying to learn right now is how severely are they going to be impacted? What's going to happen? There's even been some issues in the southern part of Puget Sound where people are having problems with the oysters reproducing, and people are saying, wow, the oysters and the clams are having trouble with reproduction. You know, could this be an early sign? And we're just in the process of trying to figure out what the role of climate change could be in that. Another thing that we're going to see where I live, we have two high tides and two low tides a day. And one of those lows is really low and one is really high. And interestingly enough, to challenge all of the marine organisms, the low tide is low during the summertime and high during the day in the summertime, so everything gets hot. And in the wintertime, it's low at night, so everything gets cold. And we also depend on having fresh water running in all the time. We're a big estuary here, and we think that climate change is going to change the way that we have our storm events. So we're going to have a lot less snowpack and a lot more flooding during the wintertime. And what that's going to do, with the less snowpack, it's going to decrease the amount of water that we have coming down in the late spring and summertime. And so it's going to really change the way that salmon can move from the ocean back up these rivers because of the amount of water that's going to be decreased. We're going to get a lot more water in storm events and a lot less snow at the high altitude. So I think there's going to be some big impacts there. People always say, well, Joe, what can I do about that? That sounds just huge and really overwhelming.
That was my next question. What, I'm going, wow, I can't flush my toilet, and oh my goodness, what am I going to do with the leftover medication, and my cats have to poop, and it's like, okay, I'm stuck here, Joe. What can I do as a pet owner and just a human being?
Yeah, and it's a good thing, and we actually just wrote an article called The Top 10 Principles for Designing a Healthy Marine Ecosystem, and people can get that on our website, cdocsociety.org. And one of the top principles is idea of resiliency. People say, well, what is resiliency? And it really is our ability or the ecosystem's ability or wildlife's ability to take multiple punches. You know, nobody gets knocked out with a 1-2 punch. It's really boom, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hits. And even though we may only have limited things we can do right now as far as climate change goes, we can do a lot of other things that is going to benefit the ecosystem, and it's going to benefit wildlife, and ultimately it's going to benefit us. Everything we do actually has an impact on land and on the ocean, even if you don't live near the ocean. I tell people, look, you know, be thinking about everything you can do, putting less chemicals on your lawn, planting some more trees where that's appropriate, riding your bicycle when that's possible, picking up after your dog or your cat when that's possible. All of those things can make a really big difference in what we can do. The other thing I tell people to do is I say, you know, get educated. Learn about what the issues are. Learn about what, you know, you can do. How does this impact you? And then get out there and enjoy what there is to do. Not just watching it on TV, but really getting out there and getting wet or getting dirty and really experiencing all the wonderful stuff that we do have out there. That really keeps you from getting overwhelmed.
Okay, this just sounds like there's so much to do, and it seems like one person can't make a difference, but I do know that. You know, one person turning off a light bulb and one person using less chemicals on their lawn, it just all adds up, and hopefully it all adds up to a healthier environment, marine and otherwise. Are we going to run out of fish to eat? We're polluting everything, and I know that all of a sudden they'll say certain fish are endangered, and again, it gets back to, wow, there's a lot of ocean. How come we're running out of fish?
Right, and that's a really big concern, because for a long time we thought, oh, the fish are just out there and we can just keep taking them. And we've learned from things like the cod fishery on the east coast of the United States, not only can we run out of fish to eat, but we can stop fishing that and those fish don't come back because we've damaged it so much. So I think right now people are saying, look, if we don't do something different, we theoretically could run out of fish to eat out of the ocean, and we may only fish maybe we're eating are ones that we farm in ponds like catfish and things like that. So right now people are really taking a concerted effort to try and look at our fishing practices and say what is really sustainable and what fish species can we catch a lot of and what fish species can't we catch a lot of. There's some fish species that mature in a couple years and we can harvest them and be happy about that. There are other fish species that can live to be 200 years old, and obviously we don't want to be harvesting those fish like we do.
What type of fish is that?
Well, we have some rockfish in this area, Bernadine, like the yellow-eye rockfish that can be 118 years old, or the rock-eye rockfish that can be over 200 years old. Even the spiny dogfish, which is something that I thought, oh, it's just an old dogfish, you know, they can live to be 100 years old. And when you start to realize that, you start to think, wow, these are like plants in the desert that may only flower every 40 or 80 years. We need to be much more respectful about these fish and about making sure that they exist for generations to come.
Are there a lot of veterinarians such as yourself who are so interested in the marine ecology, marine health?
I think there are. I think there are more all the time, and I think most of us probably got into it because we watched things like Flipper on TV, or we went to aquaria and we saw all the cool fish and marine mammals that are out there. And so there are ones that are obviously specializing in taking care of individual animals at aquarias or at stranding networks, and there are ones who realize, wow, there's a bigger concern. There may be one. It's animals here, but what are we going to do about keeping the population healthy for a long time, and what can we as veterinarians do? So there are more and more veterinarians that are looking at ways that we can have healthy ecosystems for wildlife.
I just have to ask, what is your most favorite fish or marine mammal?
Well, I would have to say I really like killer whales. I think that they're just great, and I hate to even pick something as huge as that because, you know, a male killer whale can be 9 meters and weigh almost 11,000 pounds, but, man, they are just magnificent animals. And when you think that some of these females can live to be 90 years old, it's just amazing.
And you had a chance to interact with them on a one-to-one?
Well, fortunately, I have. We live in a place where we have several different types of killer whales, and one of my favorite experiences, we were actually scuba diving and counting fish at a spot, and we were in an area where the killer whales were around, and they were eating a lot of salmon, and we were kind of waiting for him to move on to get in the water. And then I saw a friend of mine who takes photographs of killer whales. You know, he can individually identify one killer whale from the other. And I said, "You think we're okay to get in?" He said, "Just get in. You're not going to bother them." So we jumped in, and the whole time we were underwater, probably 45 or 50 minutes, we could hear the killer whales talking to each other the whole time. It was just amazing.
Oh, wow. I can imagine people after listening to this are saying, "Okay, I'm signing up for scuba lessons. I'm going in." Well, this has been fantastic. If people want to learn more, Dr. Gatos, about marine ecology, marine health, and how it's affecting the land, where can they go?
I would send them to our website, www.seadocsociety.org, and they can find information about killer whales there. They can find information about diseases of wild animals, and they can find information about what they can do to make a difference.
Wow, I definitely am going to take my scuba lessons, go down to the ocean later on this weekend, and enjoy it. I'm so fortunate to be close by, because after talking today with Dr. Joseph Gatos, the chief scientist and wildlife veterinarian at UC Davis Wildlife Center, Orcas Island in East Sound, Washington, people will be knocking on your door soon, Dr. Gatos. I have just learned so much, and I realize that what I do here on land truly affects the entire ocean, the entire world. Thank you so much for listening. Please come back again next week to The Pet Doctor, where hopefully we can teach you to be the best pet owner that you can be. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.